You're listening to Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, featuring Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President of Public Policy at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. And now, here's Gary.
Hi, this is Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President for Public Policy and Culture at the James Dobson Family Institute. Welcome to our podcast, Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom. Well, we're having our conversation today at a difficult time. There's a significant battle going on in the Middle East, which the whole country is focused on. Of course, this is not the first battle in the Middle East. That's been going on for a while. American and Israeli armed forces are in harm's way fighting the Islamic Republic of Iran. So we wanted you to know about what the facts are and maybe give you some guidance about how Christians should react to this news. Now, first of all, I'm sure I don't need to remind you about this, but all of us, whatever you think about the strategy that's being deployed or whether this was the right idea, the wrong idea, we'll debate all that. But all of us should be in prayer for the safety of U.S. military forces and our allies in Israel, the men and women in the Israeli armed forces and in the United States armed forces are doing today at great risk to themselves what these two nations call on them to do. Our military, Israel's military, are supposed to protect and defend the citizens of their country. And that means they're often doing that when we're asleep in our beds at night. I can tell you that one of the worst reports that presidents get every morning is an overnight threat assessment about things that happened in the world overnight while we were sleeping that were thwarted, that were stopped, that were blocked by the American military, the American armed forces, our intelligence agencies. And we don't even hear about the details. We don't even know what happened. But presidents know, and it's one of the reasons they turn gray when they're in office. But this we are hearing about. We know there's a major conflict. We know that men and women, good men and women, are in harm's way. We've already suffered casualties. There likely will be more. Now, one of the things we've been saying at JDFI is that if America's going to be protected and saved, in addition to having great armed forces, you, Christian citizens, need to be engaged. That none of the problems facing our country are going to be solved without the active involvement of discerning Christian citizens. And to have discernment, you have to have the truth. You need to know the facts. And man, are those hard to come by in America in 2026. We all know that, right? You turn on the television set and you're listening to some talking head on one of the networks or on CNN or MSNBC, and you can almost guarantee that half the stuff they're telling you is the exact opposite of what they're saying. And so how do you sort it all out? How do you figure out what the real truth is? It's not easy, but this is something you can rely on JDFI doing. We will, any chance we get, provide you the facts and information that you need to make valid decisions and reach valid conclusions as a follower of Jesus Christ about what you should be doing as a citizen during whatever the problem is or the crisis is that we're facing. Now, the war that's raging right now is changing by the hour. By time you hear this, there may have been many different turns of events, and I'm not a prophet, so I can't tell you what those will be, but I can tell you what the situation is as the week was beginning. And first, I want to share with you what the president said when the news broke that we had basically sunk a good bit of the Iranian Navy. Let's listen to that right now.
Earlier today, our Navy made a measured response to Iran's latest use of military force against U.S. ships in international waters, as well as its continued military and terrorist attacks against a number of non-belligerents. Following the destruction of the two Iranian military platforms, whose personnel evacuated after our warning, several Iran naval vessels and small boats attempted to engage our ships and aircraft. 3 Iranian naval vessels and at least 2 small boats were sunk or very severely damaged. We've taken this action to make certain the Iranians have no illusions about the cost of irresponsible behavior. We aim to deter further Iranian aggression, not provoke it. They must know that we will protect our ships, and if they threaten us, they'll pay a price. A more normal relationship with Iran is desirable, and we're prepared for it. But such a relationship is not possible so long as Iran attacks neutral ships, threatens its neighbors, supports terrorism, and refuses to end the bloody war with Iraq.
Okay, so I bet some of you were messing around with the volume just then. If you've heard anything in recent years, it's hear Donald Trump speak. That is not Donald Trump. And you're absolutely right. That was not Donald Trump announcing that the United States has sunk a good bit of the Iranian Navy, although we have done exactly that. No, what you just listened to was Ronald Reagan in 1988 announcing before a speech that the United States had just sunk virtually the entire Iranian Navy. That's right, Ronald Reagan, not Donald Trump, who just had to do the same thing. That, you know, 1988, that's 38 years ago. And if you listen to what Reagan was saying, he not only said that we had done this, he was telling you why, that Iran continued to be involved in terrorism, that they were harassing military assets. They were harassing our ships. They were doing all sorts of things that you don't do to a powerful country like the United States. They were also engaged in a major war with Iraq at the time. And President Reagan, as he makes this announcement, he sort of holds out a offer of peace. He said, look, we'd like to have normal relations with Iran. They need to end that war against Iraq, and then we can begin to sit down and talk some of these things through. Wow. The more things change, the more things are the same. So you need to know the history. And the media is acting that all this began last weekend. It did not begin last weekend. In fact, it didn't even begin in 1988. Which is when the Reagan clip that I played for you was being said. No, let's start even before then. Let's go back to 1979. In 1979, the Shah of Iran, it was the equivalent of being a king. He was a longtime ally of the United States. And there was a lot of discontent in the country. There was an Islamic revival going on in the country. More and more Iranians were becoming very serious about their Shiite Islamic faith. There was a revolutionary atmosphere, and eventually the Shah of Iran in 1979 was overthrown by these radical Shiites led by the Islamic cleric Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini. Now, that sounds a lot like a guy that just got killed in the current conflict with Iran. Iran has only had 2 leaders. The guy that took over the country in 1979, 1980, and the second one that whose life just ended recently when Israel took him out along with a lot of other leaders of the Islamic Republic. So the Islamists take over. The revolutionaries established in 1979 the Islamic Republic of Iran, and in their founding documents, they stated what their republic, their Islamic Republic, was going to be all about. You know, we've talked about what we said in our revolutionary document in 1776 about what the American Republic was going to be about. We said, and by the way, they had a religious idea, the Iranians did. We had a religious idea. Our religious idea in the second paragraph of the Declaration of Independence was we were going to set up this republic that was based on the idea that liberty comes from the God of the Bible, our creator, not from government, and that among the liberty God gave us was the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. that these were rights that no government could legitimately take away. That's the whole idea of America. Well, what was the whole idea of the Iranian Republic, the Islamic Republic of Iran, set up in 1979? They put in their founding documents that their impetus, their reason for existing, was to commit a second Holocaust, to wipe Israel off the face of the earth, and to convert the entire world to Islam. That is in their founding documents. During that revolution, the Iranian radicals seized the United States Embassy in Tehran. They took 52 Americans hostage. They held those American hostages through 79 and the rest of 1980. I was around at the time. I was here in Washington, D.C. I remember those months very well. Toward the end of that time, I was working in the Ronald Reagan campaign, driven at least in part by the fact that the United States had been humiliated for over a year. Jimmy Carter was president. He couldn't figure out what to do about this. He was weak. He was very reticent, very hesitant to use any kind of military force. There was an effort to rescue the hostages that just blew up in our face. Jimmy Carter tried to run the rescue effort out of the White House. Yeah, like that's going to work. So in 1980, Americans are angry. They're depressed. Why are we so weak? What are these bunch of crazy people doing? Why are we letting them get away with holding our diplomatic personnel prisoner like this? Ronald Reagan's running for office. He's running against Jimmy Carter. And Ronald Reagan says in the campaign, if I win this election, I'm telling Iran's government right now, those hostages better come home before I take the oath of office, or Iran is going to pay a terrible price. That was one of Ronald Reagan's major campaign themes. Ronald Reagan went on, won the election, and on Inauguration Day, as he was taking the oath of office, the Islamic Republic of Iran thought about it a little bit, and they released our hostages. So it was an early indication that Iran understands strength. Now, of course, the Iran of 1980, 1981, they were not as strong as they are today. You know, when you think that this all began in 1979, 1980, 1981, and here we are, what is that? Oh, you know, 19 years. My goodness, we're going on a half century of this. So what's the problem? Right? Can't we work this out? I mean, Iran is a historically a great nation. They're the Persia of the Bible. The United States is a great nation. Why can't we talk this out? Oh, a lot of presidents have tried, and you need to know why it's so difficult to talk it out. The Iranian leaders have a particular theology. In fact, just like many Christians believe, I believe that some of the events we're seeing in the Middle East are events that have been prophesied in the Bible. And whether they are the events or whether they are just hints of events yet to come, our Bible does teach us that there will be dramatic events in the Middle East, including conflicts and wars. And one thing will lead to another, and all of this leads eventually to the return of Jesus that we all wait for with great hope and anticipation. But the Shiite rulers of Iran have a totally different end of times theology. They are expecting their own Messiah. He's referred to as the 12th Imam, or he's known as the Mahdi. He is supposed to emerge out of a well. Yeah, you heard me right, a well, you know, like a drinking well that you take water out of. He's supposed to come out of that well that's located in a mosque in a place called Qum, Iran. And when he comes out, everybody will be able to tell that he is the Mahdi, the 12th Imam, because of what he does as soon as he comes out of the well. And what he does is conduct a genocide, killing all the Christians and Jews in the world. That's what they think is going to happen. And they are deeply motivated in everything that they do by that radical Shiite Islamic belief about what the future holds. Now, it's even a little worse than that because they believe they have a religious obligation to create the conditions in the world that will hasten the arrival of the Mahdi. Shiite radicals believe that eventually the flag of Islam will fly all over the world. Some Shiite clerics around the world have said that they believe they will not die before they see the flag of Islam raised over the White House itself. Now, the fanaticism of the Islamic Republic of Iran becomes fully apparent when you look at some of their history. And I'm just going to mention one thing, because this incident is so contrary to what and how Christians think and how Jews think and what our moral standards are, that by itself, it should tell you we are not dealing with normal people. Ronald Reagan referred to this war between Iran and Iraq. Iraq had a much smaller military, so they were outmanned. Iran had more powerful weapons, so the advantage was clearly going to go to Iran. But the Iraqis, thinking ahead, tried to put up barriers that would prevent a large Iranian army from entering their country. And one of those barriers was a minefield. You know what that is. These are these explosive devices which are buried under the dirt. And if somebody steps on one of them, depending on the kind of mine it is, it either blows up immediately or it blows up as soon as you lift your foot off of where you just stepped. So how was Iran going to get its army across that minefield in order to be able to have enough men left at the end to fight the Iraqi army? Well, what the clerics of Iran came up with was they would get children, quote unquote, volunteers to clear the minefield. They told their own children that today, because you are serving the Islamic Republic, you will be in paradise with Allah. So the children, hundreds and hundreds of Iranian children, were sent walking out into the minefield while they were being blown up by the hundreds. And that cleared the minefield, allowing the Iranian army to go into Iraq. Can you imagine? That is beyond our comprehension. Any American leader that would do something like that would be in jail in short order. Now, all the way back since 1979, this regime in Iran has been a force for terrorism and violence around the world. In 1983, this was, again, when Ronald Reagan was president, a Shiite Islamist suicide bomber linked to Iran blew up Marines sleeping in their barracks in Beirut, Lebanon. As I recall, it was on a Sunday morning, killed 241 American military personnel. As the years passed, the Iranian government funded and trained proxy terrorist groups to launch attacks against American and Israeli interests. And you see what their strategy was here. They didn't launch the attack right out of Iran, because if they did that, well, we might respond by going into Iran. No, they would get these followers in places like Lebanon and other places. They would train them, they would arm them, and they would give them their marching orders, and they would carry out the dirty work of the Iranian government. Some of these groups included Hezbollah in Lebanon, Hamas in Gaza. It was Hamas, remember, which carried out the horrific slaughter of Israelis on October 7, 2023. Which, by the way, set off all of the current conflicts that are going on. Recall when that happened, Israel responded in Gaza. The university campuses in America erupt erupted in protest, not against Hamas, but against Israel. Anti-Semitism exploded across Europe and in the United States. I mean, we saw some things that, quite frankly, had been bubbling underneath the surface that we didn't know about until this event. So they also armed a group called the Houthis in Yemen. And that group has attacked Israel and ships in the Gulf of Aden heading to the Red Sea and the Suez Canal. Usually those ships are carrying oil. I want to bring this home because what they've done to America should not be forgotten either. During the Iraq and Afghanistan wars, we lost hundreds of U.S. soldiers who were blown up by improvised explosive devices, IEDs, or roadside bombs. Hundreds were killed. Thousands were maimed and wounded. There are families whose members may be listening to this podcast who have a son or a grandson, a daughter or granddaughter in their family who has lost a leg or an arm or who was horribly wounded and had to spend months in hospitals. These IEDs were beyond the technological capacity of forces in Iraq or Afghanistan to produce. They were produced in Iran, and they had one purpose: to inflict as much death and as much maiming and as much destruction on American forces as possible, so that America would lose its will, so that America would be reluctant in the future to confront evil. They were responsible for that, and they paid no price for it. Now, in President Trump's first term, he began to pressure Iran in a number of different ways. When one of their generals, Qassem Soleimani, who had conducted a number of operations against the United States, when President Trump found out where he was given information that if we struck immediately, we could eliminate this Iranian general who was a terrorist leader. And Trump immediately signed off on that, and Soleimani went on to see his maker. After that, President Trump turned his sights toward making peace agreements with other countries in the Middle East that were interested in peace and a better life for their people and economic growth. Those peace treaties were called the Abraham Accords. And of course, Iran was not interested in being part of that. So it now gets toward the end. Let's fast forward toward the end of President Trump's first term. Rumors began to sweep through Washington, D.C., that because the Trump administration in his first term had been tough on Iran, that the government of Iran had put a price tag on the head of Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and also on other officials in the Trump administration. And there was also pretty significant, believable evidence that they also hoped to assassinate Donald Trump himself. During the interim of the Biden presidency, as you remember, Joe Biden opened the borders of the United States. At least 15 million people entered the United States. The overwhelming majority of them, there are people that should not have been allowed in. And many of them came from countries in the Middle East. U.S. intelligence and experts believe that because of those open borders, there are Iranian hit squads inside the United States right now. Now, in 2024, when President Trump was running for a second term, there was credible evidence that Iranian hit squads were going to try to assassinate him before the election. How credible were these reports? Well, credible enough that during the closing weeks of the 2024 presidential campaign, the campaign used decoy airplanes to transport Donald Trump because we were concerned that the Iranians, through their operatives inside the United States, might use a surface-to-air missile to shoot down Donald Trump's campaign plane. So there were planes that were marked the campaign plane, other planes that weren't marked. Several planes would move at the same time, all to thwart an assassination attempt. Of course, in 2024, President Trump did survive an assassination attempt in Butler, Pennsylvania, which, by the way, he attributes his survival of that attempt to God, the God of the Bible. Donald Trump believes that God led him to turn his head at exactly the right time so that the assassin's bullet would graze his ear instead of plowing into his brains, which would have changed the whole course of American history. Need I say, not for the better. In early 2025, the Trump administration tried negotiations with Iran again. There was another round of negotiations over Iran's nuclear ambitions. The evidence was growing that the Ayatollah's radical regime was getting closer and closer to developing the world's most dangerous weapons. So President Trump ordered B-2 stealth bombers to take out Iran's nuclear weapons program. That operation was stunning. The whole world was amazed at the precision and the remarkable success of that operation. But the Iranians continued to develop ballistic missiles and were beginning to rebuild their nuclear weapons program hidden deep in underground bunkers. Now, I want to point out something here that is, again, gets back to the religious beliefs of the Iranian leadership and some sizable portion of the Iranian people. The United States and Russia have had nuclear weapons for decades. They've never used them against each other. The reason is that both countries have enough nuclear weapons that if one country fired at the other, they know, Russia knows, and we know, the other country would fire its nuclear weapons. All of Russia's cities would be wiped out. All of America's cities would be wiped out. Some people believe the entire world would be wiped out. So this fact is called mutually assured destruction, or MAD for short. It's a pretty depressing thing to think about. But it restrained both of these nations. I mean, the United States, no leader of the United States would want all of its cities wiped out. And even the godless communists that ran Russia before communism fell, you know, they thought the only thing that existed was this life. Why would they want to die? That they're, you know, to them, that would be the end of everything. So neither the United States or Russia use nuclear weapons. But if nuclear weapons get into the hands of the Iranian Shiite leaders, their mindset is completely different. They believe the day, if they die killing infidels, that that very day when they die, they will immediately be in paradise and will get their rewards from Allah because they died killing the infidel. So you cannot, you must not allow a regime led by crazy people have access to nuclear weapons. But that's exactly what Iran is trying to do. So in recent months, along with all the other problems in the Middle East and problems that the Iranian government has, their economy was tanking, and part of that is because of sanctions that we have put on them as well as other countries have put on them. The people of Iran began to get more and more angry at their leaders. Many Iranians do not want to live under radical Shiite rules. Women in Iran particularly want more freedom. They don't want to be forced to cover their heads and cover from their feet to their head with the garments so that nobody can see them. There's all kinds of human rights violations in Iran. And so demonstrations broke out all over the country. President Trump warned the Iranian government to not mistreat those demonstrators. But in fact, as the demonstrations grew, the Iranian government, I think, and most experts believe, started to fear for the fact that they could be overthrown. The current ruling Ayatollah ordered his men into the streets, and we can't get the exact figures because it's a closed society. We don't have a lot of information, but experts believe that somewhere between 10,000 and 30,000 Iranian civilians were murdered in the streets of the cities of Iran. And you know what was, I mean, that's horrible all by itself. But did you notice something during all of that? Where were all the demonstrators in the United States? Remember how the demonstrators came out when the war between Gaza and Israel was taking place? And unfortunately, the terrorists in Gaza hide behind civilians. So when Israel would go in to take them out, there were civilian casualties. The campuses of America erupted. There were major demonstrations in cities like New York. The newly elected socialist Marxist mayor of New York City, Mamdani, when he was running for mayor during this period of time, criticized Israel, accused them of conducting a genocide. "I stand with the Palestinian people," he said. But when the Iranian government was slaughtering women and children and civilian men in the streets of their capital and their major cities, Mamdani did not say a word. There were no demonstrations on the campuses of America. Nobody in Congress was screaming about what was happening because there was no way to blame what was happening on Israel or on Jews or on Donald Trump. And so everybody just went about their business. Well, in February, after this massacre, President Trump instructed U.S. envoys to try one more time to negotiate with Iran over its nuclear weapons and its ballistic missile programs. At the same time, the president began moving military assets into the Middle East. But the president knows, as most of us know, that it has been key to Iranian strategy to always use negotiations not to reach actual agreements, but to use negotiations as a delaying tactic. In the last couple of weeks, we began to get credible reports that Iran, seeing the United States' mass military assets, naval assets in the Middle East, that the Iranian government was debating whether to hit us first. And when that became known to the United States, the Trump administration decided they couldn't wait any longer. And so on Saturday, February 28th, U.S. and Israeli forces began Operation Epic Fury. And as I mentioned, on the first day of the conflict, the Israeli military took out Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, and dozens of other top regime officials. In response to that, Iran has not only tried to attack U.S. assets in the region, they've launched attacks against Israel. And listen to this because it's important. They have launched missile and drone attacks on the territory or the interests of 14 other countries in the Middle East, all of those countries, majority Muslim. So this is not a war between the Muslims of Iran and the Jews of Israel. It's not a war of the Muslims of Iran against the Christians in the United States. Iran is waging war against Israel, the United States, and other Muslim countries that do not share the radical Shiite Islamic philosophy of Islam, of Iran's government. Now, the president has speculated, and he's hoping that this military operation could be over in 4 weeks. And I'm here in Washington, D.C., and I share the same feeling that I know millions of Americans share, which is that after the no-win wars in Afghanistan and in Iraq, no one is interested in the United States getting bogged down in a land war in the Middle East, in Iran, in which thousands of other Americans and Israelis will die in the conflict, and the war never ends because our governments aren't willing to do what it takes to win the war. The president criticized the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he does not want to make that mistake again. He's hoping that the massive firepower that we have accumulated with our Navy fleet and bombers and fighter jets all over the region will bring the Iranian leadership to its senses. He's further hoping that maybe somebody in the Iranian military might realize that the smart thing to do at this point is to defend the Iranian people from the radical Shiites that currently lead them. So if that happens, this whole scenario could end in a very positive way with the people of Iran getting some additional freedom that they have not enjoyed in decades. But even if that doesn't happen, if we can degrade the Iranian missile program, if we can degrade their nuclear arms program, buying maybe a decade or more of time to deal with this problem, that will be a huge development, more than worth whatever anxiety anyone is feeling during a week in which tremendous conflict and battles are going on. Now, I want to close by going back to religion. As Christians, we know that Iran is prominently mentioned in the Bible. In biblical times, the country is not known as Iran. It's known as Persia. In fact, Persia was not renamed Iran until, I think, 1935, not that long ago. The book of Esther in our Bible is about a Persian official who plots to kill the Jewish people. Queen Esther exposes the plot against her people when she tells the king about it, and he stops the plot. As the war broke out in this past week, the Jewish people celebrate Esther and God's salvation in the holiday called Purim, which started this week as the war began with Iran. And as I mentioned very early on in my conversation today with you, many Christian scholars and evangelical theologians believe that modern Iran, Persia, will play a major role in God's conclusion of world history. But in our end of time scenario, Christ's arrival does not mean death and destruction. It means salvation for the world. And that is a belief and a civilization, Judeo-Christian civilization, that's worth defending and fighting for. God bless our brave men and women in the military who daily risk their lives to keep us safe. And God bless President Trump and his team as he navigates us through these dangerous times. And God bless all of you until we're back together again.
Subscribe to Gary Bauer's Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, where you find your favorite podcasts. Just hit the subscribe button to ensure you receive every episode.